John Paul Morosi is the is our MLB insider with the MLB Network. He's reported just today that the Jays continue to have interest in Andrew Cashner among the group of pitchers they're looking at. And John Paul Morosi joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Tell me about Andrew Cashner and why the Blue Jays, and indeed why the Blue Jays and several other teams still have interest in Andrew Cashner. And let's put this out there for people, because you know there are people out there who are going to be thinking, why do you have any interest in a borderline free agent who is still out there right now? Doesn't that mean that he's not very good? The answer, of course, given this free agent class, is no. It just means he hasn't signed yet.
Right. It's been such a tricky free agent market, Jeff. And the Jays, I'm told from sources, are looking predominantly at someone they can probably get on a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
That is their preference. That fits with what they've been doing all offseason long. When you think about Marco Estrada's one-year extension, Curtis Granderson's one-year deal, they're going for either controllable pieces like Solarte and Grichuk, who are not yet at that free agent level, or extending players by 1 year, and that's what Cashner could possibly be. Cashner may be able to get a two-year deal. His overall numbers with Texas last year, in terms of the traditional numbers, were actually quite good, a 3.40 ERA in 166 and two-thirds innings, but he did not strike out many batters, just 86 strikeouts in 166 and two-thirds innings, which is really low by the standards of what you look for in modern times, given the strikeout frenzy that we saw across the majors in 2017. So that would be a bit of a departure from maybe what the Jays, from a metric standpoint, would be looking at. He also gives up a relatively high percentage of fly balls. But then again, I was looking at those numbers by Fangraphs.com in terms of the overall qualifying major league pitchers in terms of fly ball percentage. The leader in baseball last year was Marco Estrada at 50.3%. They brought him back. So didn't stop him with Marco, and Cashner is around 32%. So from that standpoint, maybe even a little bit better than what they have with Marco.
Yeah, and I look, and again, when you bring a guy into this situation, I mean, I'm not saying a team would be averse to an experiment, but I would rather bring a guy in and know what he's going to give me than maybe reach a little bit, you know, especially considering what you're going to be asked. You're going to be asking Andrew Cashner to do. Like there is, you know, I remember Dan Duquette telling me one time, Jeff, we were talking about his Expos lineup. He goes, Jeff, they can't all be all-stars. Not everybody on every team is an all-star. He said, I just want guys that are going to give me what I know they can give me, and I can manage around that. And I've always kind of kept that in my mind.
That's a very good point. And again, Cashner, one thing he does do, and we talked about the batted ball percentages that he had last year with the 32.2% fly balls. He also yielded 48.6%, again, according to Fangraphs, ground balls, which ranked 15th among qualifying starters. Of course, Stroman led the majors in that category. So in that regard, he would give them something similar to what Stroman does in terms of just the amount of ground balls he could yield. And if the Jays expect to have maybe a bit improved infield defense based on different alignments, and obviously bringing in Solarte to help shore up the middle part of the diamond, given the health situation of Travis or Tulo, I think that he's a good fit. I do, and for that role, he's I think probably about as good of a fourth or fifth starter as you could hope to have in the American League. And I think going big picture, Jeff, this team will go as far as I think Stroman and Sanchez will take them. I think those are still the two key starting pitchers. Stroman was the workhorse last year. An amazing year for him coming off of the WBC and winning the MVP there and still throwing 200 innings was really impressive. I think speaks to his excellent level of both competitiveness and his conditioning. And then Sanchez, of course, we know what a vexing year it was for the Jays from the standpoint of Aaron's health, and he's got to answer the bell. They need him in a big way in 2018, and if Aaron is not healthy for the full season, I find it very difficult to believe this team's going to be able to compete with the likes of the Red Sox and the Yankees in the American League East.
What do you make of the whole the back and forth between Josh Donaldson and John Heyman over, you know, John Heyman's story that, you know, Josh you know, essentially he wants to get paid, and, you know, he's looking for, understandably, looking for the biggest contract he can get. And, you know, Josh responding to John that, you know, to paraphrase him, that we can't talk about what offer I'm going to get from the Blue Jays and how it's going to compare to, or what offer I'm going to get from other teams and how it's going to compare to what the Blue Jays have offered me, because I haven't received an offer yet from the Blue Jays. Now, we know Ross Atkins at Pitch Talk said last week that, and I'm going to be in dicey ground here, I believe he said that Josh and his agent know the value we have attached to the player. So that either means to me, one, Josh has looked at the number and said, yeah, right. Or two, it's just we're not even at a very, 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 very preliminary stage of discussions between the sides, which, of course, if that's the case, that carries its own set of narratives.
Well, it's certainly, Jeff, a difficult thing, first and foremost, for all of us that are reporting on the free agent market, when you're going to express someone's beliefs about what their market value is or what they want. We have to remember that the people that we're talking about follow us on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I think in general there's always that possibility of, well, if they disagree with what we're saying, there's going to be often a very public response to that. I think that's just part of the world in which we live right now. I guess that's my comment on that particular segment of it. But I think to the larger question of what Josh Donaldson wants, based on his numbers, Jeff, he has been one of the elite players in the game, really even before he got to Toronto, but certainly since then. And I think one part of John's report that does hold merit, I think, as a broader point, is that if Machado is going to be a shortstop, perhaps that does help Josh Donaldson's case a little bit next offseason, if he becomes then the standalone premier third baseman out there. Mm. If Manny Machado is going to be looked upon as a shortstop, so I think that to me is from what John reported, I think an interesting observation that it does clear the way a bit for Josh to have maybe a bit more influence on the marketplace if Manny Machado is in fact going to be presented as a shortstop to the larger market. Does Josh Donaldson want to get paid a lot of money? I'm sure he does. He deserves that. And I do think, though, and I've said this before, Jeff, that if there was going to be a real strong effort to sign Josh Donaldson at the levels that he is likely to merit, I believe it would have happened already. Mm-hmm. And that's just my own personal opinion on it.
Yeah, in the same way,
that's
yes.
I'm not saying that from Josh, from his friends, from his people, from his agent, from the Jays' standpoint either. Just from having observed a great many former MVPs and MVP caliber players getting closer and closer to free agency, if they show up at spring training without a deal, I find it very difficult to imagine it's going to happen for them either during that 6 weeks of spring training or during the 6 months of the season. I find that. It's rare. We went through it with Albert Pujols to an extent. We went through it with Robinson Cano to an extent. When a major marquee player shows up to spring training, there's no deal. The clock starts ticking, and I guess we're going to find out what it means for Manny Machado and for Donaldson and for Bryce Harper and for Clayton Kershaw in this very unique free agent class coming up. But I'm of the mind, Jeff, that, and I think it sounds like you're of the same mind, that 1 year out is difficult. If we were going to see this deal happen, it would have been a much better conversation a year ago.
Yeah, and I wrote at the winter meetings when, you know, Buck Showalter first sort of, when he brought the idea up of Manny going to shortstop. One of the interesting elements here is that he and Josh are both represented by the same agent. So it's to Dan Lozano's benefit to have his player marketed as a shortstop and have the other guy marketed as a third baseman. Now, and who knows, you know, Manny Machado may sign with the team next year and be a third baseman next year. That's the way it could work out. But from the agent's point of view, it makes it a lot easier to find a landing spot for your guy, your third baseman, if you have taken another guy who would probably be anybody's first choice at that spot, but kind of muddied the waters by having him play shortstop.
Right. Well, it creates value, and I think the one thing we've
it creates value
we've
for
seen,
both guys.
Exactly, it creates value for everybody. It creates value for Manny. It creates value for Josh, and it creates value for their agent. And I think if there's one thing that we've seen, though, this winter, and let's see how it all plays out in terms of where all the Scott Boras clients land, but controlling key players at different stations of the marketplace does not necessarily guarantee that the outcomes are going to be great for everybody. Because Scott Boras has this offseason, J.D. Martinez, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Greg Holland, Jake Arrieta. So he's got third baseman, first baseman, outfielder, starting pitcher, relief pitcher, and none of them have signed yet. Mm. He also has Carlos Gonzalez, who, as the right bounce-back candidate, I think has a lot of value. So Scott is in control of so many of these pieces. Some would say that perhaps he knows that he has close to acceptable offers for maybe one or more of his guys, and that ideally he doesn't want to show his full hand until they all have dance partners, so to speak. That would I'm not saying that's the case. One could outwardly say that that would work to Scott's benefit if that were his strategy. So there's a lot of, as we talk about the overall marketplace, there's a lot of guesswork still being done about what exactly Scott has on the table for which players. We don't know. And we don't know how that overall picture fits together. So I think we should be careful to divine too much about what it necessarily means for one agent to control multiple pieces in the marketplace. But I would say unequivocally that it helps Dan Lozano with Manny Machado next winter if, for example, he can call up the St. Louis Cardinals, who don't really have an enduring shortstop answer on their club right now, to say, hey, Manny Machado can play shortstop for you next year. How does that sound? I think it creates some very interesting possibilities if you're St. Louis going forward.
Now, this is going to be bad news for folks in Montreal who are still holding out hope of the Tampa Bay Rays perhaps moving to Montreal, although I think, as we pretty much decided, the election of the new mayor in Montreal has pretty much killed that as a possibility. But the Tampa Bay Rays are expected to make a stadium announcement today, which essentially will see the Rays announce that they've picked a site for a new stadium in Ybor City, which, for people who aren't familiar with the geography of Tampa, is to the pardon me, is to the in the eastern part of the city, going inland. It's an older area. It's a Cuban. It was the center of the Cuban American community in Tampa. It's a great area. It's trendy. It's the perfect spot for a stadium. Now, it's a long drive from St. Petersburg and Clearwater to this stadium. But, I mean, Tampa's geography, it's hard to find a spot that's perfectly located for a stadium. Now, my question to you, John, though, is, you know, this is an announcement. The funding hasn't been locked up or anything like that. But from what you're hearing, is this, you know, are we finally seeing the Rays move towards getting a stadium done and getting it done within the next 5 or 6 years?
Well, Ybor City, first of all, Jeff, is so trendy that, in fact, you, Travis McKenzie, and I once had dinner there. How
yes,
about that?
We did.
That tells you all you need to know about how trendy and chic Ybor City is, right? That was a number of years ago during spring training.
Yeah, and Travis also got in trouble at a bar. Travis also got in trouble at a bar at Ybor City, which is one of the great McKenzie stories.
We don't need to go into any detail on that one. Then.
No, but I'm going to tell it at his wedding. Yes. So. Tell the story at his wedding.
Well, as you point out, Jeff, that area is, of course, again, north and east of Channelside, where the Lightning plays. So, and it is actually connected enough by, I believe there's like a trolley car and some other transit there that will allow, if this ballpark comes to be, a little bit of linkage, at least, between that really nice area right around where the Amalie Arena is, which where they've done such a great job, the Lightning have, of really building that area up, and it's become such a great walkable place to be socially in Tampa, that this area is somewhat connected, both, I think, culturally and actual by some transit there, that it will allow the city to, I think, really extend that era, that area of commerce and entertainment. It's really, I think, a nice location. But I think, to your point, and there's a report from the St. Pete Times, or the Tampa Bay Times, rather, about the amount of financing. I think this is, this site has been mentioned for a couple months now as where they wanted to go, and this is sort of the formalization of that. But they still have a good distance to go from the standpoint of how they're going to finance this. Again, the Tampa Bay Times report indicated some questions about where the roof is coming into play, and how much it's going to cost, and the details of that. So I would say this is similar to probably where the A's were with the Laney College site they announced, that they had to then backtrack on when locally it wasn't feasible after some residents in the college community there did not back it. So I think this is certainly a step forward for Tampa Bay to keep their team, but I think it's an incremental step as opposed to a huge step. This is a one more, I think, box they had to check, where if they're going to put a stadium in the Tampa Bay area, it's going to be here at this location in Ybor City, but I am not convinced that it's going to work out yet. I think I still have to see some financing and some local some full local support on this. But I think it's productive that at least St. Petersburg and the mayor's office there has allowed them to explore other communities in the Tampa Bay area. I think that's good. And in general, Jeff, I'll summarize the point by saying this. It's good for MLB to get an answer.
Yes.
MLB, by the end of the CBA, they need answers out of Oakland. They need an answer out of Tampa Bay before they can even contemplate expansion elsewhere. So this is I think it's a good day insofar as it helps MLB and the Rays themselves get a bit of a resolution as to where and what their future looks like.
Yeah, and I'm not certain if it's good news necessarily for taxpayers in that area, but there is also a report by Noah Pransky, who we've had on, has done a lot of work. He's an investigative reporter, television reporter in the Bay Area, who did a lot of work on the Blue Jays project with the folks in Dunedin. But he has also reported that the mayor of Tampa and some well-heeled businessmen, that they've had a couple of private dinners with Stuart Sternberg, the owner of the Rays. So there does appear to be sort of that those all-important unofficial channels you need to get something like this done. Again, I don't know if I'd be thrilled about that if it was my tax dollars. But the other thing about Florida, too, is because of tourism, there are a lot of ways you can tap into tourist revenue, whether it's through a bed tax or reapportioning a proportion of tax paid on rental cars. I remember when the Montreal Expos built their spring training site in Jupiter, Florida. It was paid for by a 1%, 1.5% tax on rental cars in Palm Beach County. So there are ways in Florida you can go about funding and financing a stadium.
That's a very good point. And also, I would add this, and again, you and I have talked about this for years now, and certainly my strong belief in Montreal's eventual ability to have an MLB team is well known. But I will say this, that with Florida's television markets in general, and Stuart Sternberg has talked about this a lot, that their local and really statewide distribution of their games are actually pretty well viewed. Their local television ratings are good. So there are people in Florida, a great many of them, who care about the team and watch the team. They just don't often go and see them at the ballpark.
Right.
And so I think they're about to find out, Jeff, just how much demand there is for tickets if the stadium is moved there to Tampa, and if that then invites more people that are from sort of the Lakeland area and maybe even almost into Orlando that would go to the eastern edge of Tampa, but that would not go over the causeway and all the way down into St. Petersburg as it currently is for the Rays. So I think that television component, and obviously wanting to keep where that television agreement is signed right now to carry those games on an affiliate in Florida, I think there is a certain inertia there to keep that structure in place because the ratings have been good, and that, of course, is owned currently by Fox, that local Fox Sports Florida affiliate, Sun Sports, that broadcasts the games there in Tampa Bay and the surrounding area.
Very quickly before we let you run, Scott Boras has said that his players, his available free agents, won't work out at the MLBPA free agent spring training site. They will work out at his own facility, at the IMG facility. Is this just going to add further fuel to speculation that the Major League Baseball Players Association is on the verge here of fracturing over Tony Clark's leadership?
Well, a couple things. And number one, Ken Rosenthal actually reported last night that Scott would allow his players to work out at this MLBPA camp, but it sounds as though, Jeff, he is giving them the option, but he is also maintaining his Boras Corporation facilities, where it sounds as though, reading between the lines, Jeff, his preference is for them to stay at his own proprietary place, but he's right. Not going to physically block them from going to the MLBPA. So he is somewhat modifying his stance on that. I just wanted to note that off the top. But yeah, there is, I think, Jeff, one thing that we're going to see once this market concludes, whenever it concludes, who knows when it's going to conclude, then I think we're going to see the union regroup a little bit and say, okay, where are we at from a leadership standpoint, and also where are we at going forward, because they've got to handle a lot of situations coming up with regard to the CBA and if they're going to try to find different ways to amend it going forward. But I do think, Jeff, is there some heat on Tony Clark? Perhaps. But I think we'll find out just how much and how real all of that is once this market concludes and where all these final numbers come in.
We are going to let you run, Mr. Morosi. Always great to talk to you.
Jeff, I will see you in Ybor City for dinner, my friend, some
absolutely
point in time.
Absolutely. And we have to have a debate next week about something Olympics related, whether it's figure skating or something like that, or lugeing or bobsledding. We need to have our Olympic debate.
I eagerly look forward to that. You know, of course, Ann Arbor, Michigan is the cradle of all the great American figure skaters and ice dancers. So even though my friend Charlie White's not competing this year, I'm still a strong supporter of our figure skating and ice dancing teams. And we'll debate that. Women's hockey, get into that as well.
Wait a minute. You know figure skating too?
Well, I Charlie's a friend of mine. I don't think that actually conveys any sort of expertise. I am a fan of my friend. I think that probably about that's probably the extent of it. But I do like to watch it. I watch it a lot. And my oldest daughter is now skating. So there you go. I'm not sure. I doubt if she inherits my athletic genes that we have to worry about any sort of competition in the future. But she loves to be on the ice, so I'm very proud.
All righty, there you go, man. Every show you drop another little nugget that just adds to the multi-layered texture that is John Paul Morosi, figure skating writer.
And as usual, Jeff, I split my Olympic watching between CBC and NBC because I have to maintain my honorary Canadian status.
There you go. Have a good weekend.
You too, Jeff. Thank you.